Hey there, Quajo here, and if you haven't heard my voice, I'm the new host of the Art of Online Business. Quick update on my new offer. I did not expect the initial launch spots to sell out so fast. I'm talking about Facebook Ad Setup to Success, which is one-on-one Facebook ads coaching for the driven course creator from me, three Zoom calls within a month, and unlimited support in between so that you can run your lead generation campaigns, your launch campaigns, your SLO, self-liquidating offer funnels, exactly like I would, getting all my tips and tricks and strategies, plus just unlimited support inside of Slack or Voxer, or one lady's even doing it from inside of Messenger, with screen recordings, Loom recordings, this sort of thing, questions. This is what I'm doing, but all those limited spots at the initial launch price, they are gone. And I just wanted to explain that out of integrity to the people who took those first spots. The price has gone up, and there's one spot, maybe two, if I do some scheduling jujitsu for May. Otherwise, we're booking into June. You can click on the link in the description below to find out more, or you can go to theartofonlinebusiness.com/call if you need that kind of one-on-one Facebook help. All right, back to the episode.
What do you get when you combine simplified digital marketing, proven ROI strategies, and Metallica blasting from his headphones? You get Rick Mole ready, of course. So strap in, grab your bulletproof coffee, and get ready, because this is the art of paid traffic. Here's Rick.
All right. How many of you are struggling in building out your team? As you grow your business, how many of you are struggling with who do I hire? What types of roles do I bring onto my team first? Or maybe you already have a team and the team's growing and your team is like the biggest source of stress in your business. Well, if you're nodding your head to any of those things, you are absolutely not alone. This is one of those most challenging things, hiring and growing out your team. Whether it's in my own business, whether it's students that I'm helping scale their online expert business, or frankly, fellow online business owner friends of mine, whether you are getting your business to five figures or your business is eight figures, hiring and growing out your team is one of the most challenging things that come up. If anybody talks about, you know, oh, it's, you know, rainbows and unicorns and everything like that, you're not hearing the whole story. I guarantee you that. And I think we can all use help in building out our team, which is why I'm so excited about today's episode. What's up, my friends? Welcome back to the Art of Paid Traffic podcast. Thank you so much for coming to hang out with me today. Really appreciate it. I'm your host, Rick Mulready, and I'm here to help online experts grow and scale your business so that you can reach and help more people, so that you can amplify your impact. And when you do all that, not only do you get to increase your revenue in your business, but you and your audience get to have a better life. So as I mentioned, we can all use help in growing our team, building out our team, okay? So joining me on the show today is my good friend, Teresa Lowe. And Teresa helps online CEOs set up your team and operations to be strategic, sustainable, and scalable in an aligned and purposeful way so that you can scale your business really smartly. And I asked Teresa to come on the show today because, as I mentioned just a second ago, this is something that I think we can all use help in building out our team. Even if you're not ready to hire anybody in your business, this episode is going to be a huge help for you. So today, we get into a lot of different things. And I ask her a lot of selfish questions myself for my own business as well. So we get into what it looks like to streamline the back end of your business. We talk about why it can be such a big challenge in hiring a team. We discuss the roles of the visionary and the integrator, which are two terms that Gino Wickman talks about in his book, Rocket Fuel, which is a book that I recommend to everyone. Rocket Fuel is the follow-up to Traction by Gino Wickman as well. Traction is the Bible, is your Bible for running your business. And then Rocket Fuel is the follow-up. Cannot more highly recommend those two books, Traction and Rocket Fuel by Gino Wickman. We get into the difference between setting and communicating goals and why there's a big difference between the two. We talk about step by step how to decide what role to hire first if you're just getting going in growing out your team. We talk about how to define what you quote unquote should be doing in your business. This is what you as the visionary, as the CEO of your business, what should you be focusing on in your business? We talk about common mistakes that people make when hiring. We talk about delegating, how to delegate, the difference between being a taskmaster and giving responsibility to people in your team. And when we talk about this topic here, Teresa and I chat about perfectionism and the fear of letting go. That is something that I have struggled with for a long time in my business. And Teresa shares her own experience with that as well, because this is something that she has struggled with in the past too. We talk about why starting your don't want list can be hugely helpful when hiring your first team members. And then we talk about the fears. Once we start hiring people, then there's a whole host of new fears that start happening in your head. We dive into all that and a whole lot more. So without further ado, let's jump right into chatting with Teresa Lowe. Teresa Lowe, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm so good. Thanks for having me, Rick.
I am so glad to have you on here because we have not talked a lot about this topic here on the show. And man, you and I have talked a lot about this for several months now. We've known each other for a couple of years now, but for several months now, we've been talking about what we're going to be talking about here today. And I'm fascinated by this whole topic of team building and scaling out your business in a smart way. And, you know, this is out of all the topics that I chat with, not only my students who are at a level of, you know, ready to build their teams, but just colleagues, you know, just friends of mine who run businesses. This is the number one thing that is the big challenge. It's like, all right, I've grown the business myself. I've gotten to a point where it's really successful. Then it's like hitting a brick wall, because now it's time to like scale and hire. And the hiring part is so frustrating for so many people. So we're going to dive into all that here today. Before we do, let AOPT Nation here know a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Okay. Well, so my name's Teresa Lowe, and I help online entrepreneurs find and grow and then lead their own stellar teams. It can be a small and mighty team, but that is what's going to help them scale without them giving up more time. And it's all about streamlining the back end of their business so that they can actually have that time to work on the vision of the company.
That's so very well put, by the way.
Thank you.
there is no confusion about what you do there. but this was not always a focus for you, because you made a pivot. How long ago was it? About a year ago?
Yes, exactly.
So
yes.
Before we dive into the team and the hiring stuff, can you kind of talk a little bit about that pivot, like what you used to do? And because when we first met, you were doing your other business, and I know that you still, you know, you're involved in that a little bit right now, but like, what was the whole pivot like for you and why'd you do it?
Yeah. So I originally started a business called Living Homegrown, and that is about helping people live farm fresh without the farm. And I ran that very successfully right out of the gate. And a lot of that had to do with my background, because I actually came into the online world after being an integrator or a second in command for a top PBS gardening series, and I was the co-executive TV producer. Now, we use the term integrator in digital marketing, but basically it is the second in command, the person who executes on the vision for the CEO. So in our world, a lot of times people use the term integrator, which comes from the book Rocket Fuel. So that's why I'm using that term. But mm-hmm. in the TV producing world, it's the same position, but for television. So I did that job for 9 years, and my job was to execute on the vision of the producer. And so that meant running the team, the production team, running the episodes, which is kind of similar to us producing content and courses. So from doing that for 9 years, I really got dialed in on how to manage a team and how to work with a CEO. When I started my own business, I suddenly was the CEO. So that meant that I had to shift hats and start building my own team and work with my own people that would execute on my vision. And although I did struggle with the mental part, you know, the mindset part of making the shift, I definitely think that because I already had come from being the other half of a good team, I really got it. And I was able to skyrocket very quickly. So in other words, I understand both sides of the equation. And what I find and what I found with the people I was working with who came to me who wanted to start their own businesses was that they were struggling with that team dynamic. And I started with my one-on-one people that I was coaching in the food and garden space. I was helping them create their own businesses. And the team part just kept coming up more and more. Before I knew it, that was really what I was doing, was teaching people how to streamline the back end of their business and how to build a really stellar team that's completely aligned with them. So I completely pivoted and shifted. And last year, my team ran Living Homegrown, and I shifted completely into coaching seven-figure and six-figure entrepreneurs on setting up their own systems and their own teams.
Now, you just echoed what I said before as far as like the biggest challenge that most entrepreneurs face when they reach that point and they've made the decision, right, that they want to build out a team, because some entrepreneurs don't want to do that, which like totally cool. Like, hey, I just want to be, I'm reading A Company of One right now by Paul Jarvis, where, you know, I'm about at the time recording this, I'm about a quarter of the way in, and it's really fascinating because he's not saying like, you know, create a business just to be yourself. He's getting you to question growth for growth's sake and making sure that you create the business that is the type of business that you want and that allows you to do the types of things that you want to do. Maybe that is for yourself, but, you know, usually it's getting some people to help you out with that, whether it's contractors or full-time people on your team. Now, why do people struggle with this so much? What, like, with all the people that you have worked with, why do you think this is the biggest challenge for entrepreneurs when they're ready to hire and start building out their team?
I'll tell you what it is. It's that, first of all, we're trying to build a business. So we're really focused on the marketing and our message and trying to find our avatar and all the things. And we know that we only have so much bandwidth. There's only so many hours. So we start handing off tasks like, hey, could you make this PDF? Hey, could you go post this on my blog? And we do that instead of handing off a responsibility or a project. So before we know it, we are suddenly managing all these little tiny tasks. And that the real core of the problem is that we start having our business grow, and all of a sudden, we are running a very fast-growing company on a solopreneur framework. The CEO still has their hands in everything. They're still doing a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and they're managing this and they're managing that. And they're a taskmaster, and they're not getting to be the visionary. And so I see it every single time. And when I tell people what I do, they always like grab me by the arm and say, to help me, please. Yeah. Because it really is frustrating because we are not really taught how to build a really good team that aligns with us. And every team is different to that CEO.
Because what got us to where we are now is a completely different, we need a completely different skill set to transition and build out that team.
Exactly, exactly. And so much of it is in our head. And it's just like when we were first starting our business and we had to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And, you know, okay, we learned how to do Facebook Lives and we learned how to do podcasts and videos and we got over our fears and we stepped up and we became the CEO and we're working on our vision. But then when we start hiring people, all of a sudden there's this whole new set of fears. So new level, new devil, and we start having resistance again. And the same thing that got us over our fears before is what will get us over our fears this time. It's about getting comfortable with being uncomfortable and just being strategic with the things that we're putting in place. You don't have to hire 10 people right out of the gate. You can do it in baby steps, but you have to get help because you cannot do everything yourself. And honestly, we get, our ego gets in the way and we're like, I can do it better. I can do it better. Well, if someone is doing graphics all day long and that's all they do, they will be better than you. And you have to be able to give up that control. So it's a lot of it is in our head.
Yeah. And I'm raising my hand right now because that is me, right? I'm always saying like, well, I could do it better than that person. Like not graphics.
Yeah.
But that has held me back at times for sure, where I'm, you know, I've talked about it in the podcast here before, I'm a perfectionist. And yeah, it's like, I'm a control freak. And that's another big reason why when I'm talking to friends of mine or colleagues or whatever, who are having this challenge in building out their team or hiring, it's this, like they want to make sure that their hand is in everything and have that fear of letting go. Because if we let go, then we're not gonna, like, you know, I'm just speaking from my own personal experience. Like my brain says, if, you know, if I start to let go of this, it's not gonna be done right. Or in my mind, what's right. Or it's not gonna be done to the point or to the level that I think that I need it to be.
Exactly. And yes.
That's really what holds us back, you know?
Yes. Yes.
And when we're talking about this, it loops me back to what you said about becoming taskmasters, and we are assigning tasks rather than giving ownership and giving, you know, so here's, you know, this is the end. Well, before I even go there, like talk more about that, because that's a huge thing. And I've been very guilty of that over the years in my business as well.
Yeah. So the task versus responsibility is a huge thing. And it comes down to you making the decision. Do you want to get this piece out there? And do you want to be able to be more of the thought leader in your business? Or do you want to be the one making it exactly the way you want it, making it perfect? And perfect is an illusion. There is no such thing as perfect. And I used to be, I am a recovered perfectionist myself. Mm-hmm. I definitely came from doing that before as a TV producer, because, you know, everything is very, very meticulous in television. So I understand doing that. But what I had to wrap my head around was that it was more important for the material to get out the door. And if you only have so many hours in the day, it's so much more impactful for you to focus on the things that only you can do, where, you know, you're the face of the brand, you are the voice of the podcast. And if you can focus on those things and have some white space so that you can be creative and come up with new ideas and new things that you're going to be producing, and letting your team do some of those other tasks, you can be more impactful. You'll actually reach more people. But the idea of the task versus responsibility is probably one of the key components, because let me give you an example. If you hand off a blog post to someone, that is a task. That person will go off and create that one blog post, and they'll come back and go, okay, done. What's next? And then you have to stop what you're doing. We have the whole context switching thing where our brain has to stop and we switch gears. We get out of flow, whatever we're working on. We have to come up with something else for them to do, and we hand it off. Versus if you hand off a project and make them responsible for it, that would mean that they are now responsible for the content on the blog, all the content. So that means that they are part of the meetings in deciding what's coming down the pike. They are doing all the calendar, making sure that things are getting out the door when they need to, making sure that they're getting the content from you when they need to. And they are responsible for any metrics that you set up for that particular task or that particular responsibility. So when you change it to that, it allows you to not be watching over. They are responsible, and you can then shift your focus to something else. But it's huge, huge that we don't just hand off a task. A one-off task means that we are making all the decisions. We're watching over, did they do it? Did they do it? Are they done it yet? That, I mean, that's mental space that is getting taken away. Brain, we only have so many brain cells, so yeah, we can't divvy it up like that.
When you talk, like, say, the blog post example, and you mention metrics, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this here or ask this the question how I'm thinking about it. So if we say, all right, we're not giving a task of write this one blog post, and then, okay, I'm done, come back to me. Whereas this person's responsible for writing the content on the blog, and they're responsible for the metrics. Where does it come in where it's like the goal is to, you know, Where does it come in to have the end goal in mind? And I'm trying to think what the end goal would be, where part of that, or to achieve that goal, or one thing we can be doing to achieve that goal, is to ensure that we have content on the website, you know, twice a week or once a week or once a month or whatever it might be. You know what I'm trying to say?
Like, I totally know what you're trying to say.
Where does that come into it?
Yes. So you and I actually talked about how goals need to be part of what we share with our team.
Yes.
And this is one area that I see a lot of people lacking. They will spend all their time creating, what are the goals for the year? What are the goals for the quarter? But they don't actually have those conversations with the team. So when you are handing off a responsibility, it's super important that there is clarity around how that particular responsibility fits with the overall goal. So when you have a situation like the blog post, that's a perfect example. If you have a launch coming up, there are going to be certain posts that you want to have aligned with your runway before you have your webinar, and you're going to be leading people in. Everyone understands that big goal, and everyone is contributing. The team is working together to contribute to that overall goal. So the blog post person would be working with the social media person to make sure that everything is aligned and that you are spread out all over the place for that launch. So when it's tied with the goal and they understand that goal, then everyone is meshing together with the same common vision. And Simon Sinek did a speech one time where he was talking about how they did this experiment where they put someone in a big empty room. There was nothing in the room. And they told them they wanted them to walk to that special corner right over there. They had to walk in a straight line without turning. And the person would start walking and they would set a chair in front of them. And the person would walk around the chair and keep heading to the corner because they understood, even though they weren't supposed to make turns, that that was the ultimate goal, was to get to the corner. But if you take someone else and put them in the same room and you just say, just walk straight, don't make any turns, you don't give them a destination. When they start walking straight and you put a chair in front of them, they stop because they don't understand the ultimate goal. So when we are sharing something like you are now in charge of the blog posts that are going out, if they understand how they're tied to the bigger vision and everyone's headed in the same direction, everyone's pointed the same way, they work together. And that's how you start creating more of a self-managed team because everyone is helping each other.
Yeah, I love that. I wanna come back to the whole vision element because it's huge. It's the basis of everything we're talking about here. For someone who is just in the early stages of, like, their business has reached a point where they need some help, right? They're working way too many hours during the day. Their health is being, you know, compromised. They're losing time with their family or friends or significant other or whatever it is. And it's time to start looking for some help. And that can be a very daunting task for so many people, for most of us.
Yes.
What's the first thing? Like, what should they start with, you know, in order to go down that path?
Well, the first thing they have to do is know which thing they should be hiring for. So I really tell everyone that you need to start managing, you really have to start monitoring your time. So you want to take a week and write down anything that you were doing throughout the day that you really shouldn't have been doing that you should be handing off. We all know what we should be doing, and we know we shouldn't be doing the graphics or that we shouldn't be doing the blog posts. So if you keep track of that, you'll definitely see that there's one particular area that you keep getting sucked into that you shouldn't be. And that's the first place to start with bringing someone on. Then the second thing that you need to do is be really, really clear on the type of person that you need that will work well with you. Now, there's a lot of ways to do this. It's important that you kind of understand how you work. So I recommend everybody take a personality test. There's a ton of them out there, but I really like Myers-Briggs and DISC. And that will give you some insight into how you tick and how you work. And what you want to do is, instead of just looking at the resume to see, does this person know WordPress? It's important to see if they have a personality that will work with you. So when you are interviewing them, when they're going through the process, are they detail-oriented? Do they come off as being responsible? Do they show commitment? Have they been flying off to different jobs every 3 months and never holding a job for a long period of time? You want to have a list before you even start of what it is you want in the perfect person. And then as you're interviewing, those are the traits and the characteristics and the personality that you want to make sure this person has.
What if I'm not sure what those things are? What if it's a case of like, I don't know what I don't know, where it's like, all right, I'm clear on what I need to hire for, like what role I need to hire. I've been tracking my, like what I'm doing during the day. And then I've looked at them and it's like, you know what? Oh man, I spent, you know, 45 minutes here answering customer service questions or whatever it is. And you're like, oh, I really shouldn't be spending my time on that. So I'm clear on what the role is. From there, you know, and I want to kind of get to another question here regarding this, but like, how do I decide what, like, what is my perfect list? Like, what are my top things I'm looking for in this person if I don't even, I've never done this before. So again, yeah. I don't know what I don't know.
Sure. Well, then I tell people to start with what they don't want. So if there, everyone has pet peeves. Everyone has a pet peeve. One of mine is if someone is unresponsive. So if I send them an email or a project to do and I just get crickets, I don't even know if they're working on it or if, did they get it? Did it get stuck in spam? Like it starts to become this little thing that's in the back of my head that I start to worry about. And you get two or three of those going at once and it makes me crazy. So for me, being responsive is one of the things that I will look for because I know one of my pet peeves is someone not being responsive. So how do I test for someone being responsive? Well, when they're going through the process of applying, do they wait to the very last minute to turn in anything that you've asked them for? Like if you ask them to do a Myers-Briggs test or some type of personality test, are they waiting to the last possible minute or are they really responsive? Do they get back to you right away if you ask a question or do they wait 4 or 5 days? So there's things like that. If you have a particular person that you've worked with in the past that you just thought was the most awesome person to work with, sit down and write down how you would describe them. They were detail-oriented. They were super integral. Whatever words you would come up for that person is what you would be looking for in your perfect person.
I love it. I love it. Now, once you've decided, you're like, you've made your list and you're clear on what you're looking for. So you got your role, you've got your characteristics. Once you're clear on that, then what? Like, then where do you start finding people to interview? And then what does that process look like right there?
Yeah. So I like to post in some of the more unusual places for a job listing. One of my favorites is Craigslist. Yeah. So I post there and I actually describe the person that I'm looking for as well as the job. So I'll say, I'm looking for someone who's super detail oriented, you know, likes to check off boxes, you know, whatever it is really loves to work with customers, you know, if it's a customer service position. So that's really the next step is to put some sort of post out there wherever you want to put your post. And then as the responses start coming in, you have your little checklist of what you're looking for. And you are like, oh, this person definitely, you know, for customer service, I can just feel their personality coming through the email. That's a really good sign that they would have empathy for your customer. So things like that.
Do you like to put the carrot in the application process?
Yes, yes.
Talk about that.
Yeah. So I like to, for detail oriented, which I think 99% of us want someone who's detail oriented. Mm-hmm. I like to hide something in there, or sometimes I even make it blatant, but I like to hide something in there that they have to have really read the job description in order to see if they are detail oriented. So a real simple one is to say that they have to respond with a certain subject line. Mm-hmm. And if they don't do it exactly as you said, then you know that they didn't even read the whole post. Some people like to put in things like enclose a cat picture or something like that. And you'll be able to tell who really read your job description.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. It's amazing to me because we do stuff like this in ours, and it's amazing to me like what people like very clear instructions here, my friends. Just follow, if you're serious about it, just follow the steps. And they don't do it. They don't do it.
Yes. It's like, we can even make it one of the steps, like, you know, step 4, include a cat picture and people won't do it.
Right, exactly. All right. And it's like, and for those of us who are hiring, it's like, cool, eliminate that person right away, you know, because oftentimes we have way more interest. And it's like, oh, we have to process all these things. So it's like, well, they're doing it for you right there. They're eliminating themselves right there.
Exactly.
And then, so you've got this group of candidates, let's say you've narrowed it down to, I don't know, five people, then what's sort of the next step in your process there?
Yeah. So the next step is really to set up some interviews with that person. If they've, by this point, you have asked them for anything that you need, you know, the resume, you may have already checked out some of the resources that they've given for, you know, references for that person.
Yep.
So then the next step really is to do an interview with mm-hmm. them. And I like to do the interviews on Zoom so that you can see them and they can see you. And yep. it really, you can tell a lot about a person when you see their body language. Yeah. And also, you can really get a sense for their personality, which you might not get over the phone. They yeah. may have a really fun, friendly personality, and that may not come through on a phone call. So the yeah. interview is really the next step.
And during the interview, I like to ask behavioral-based questions. So like, describe a situation, or, you know, it's not necessarily yes or no questions. It's more like, you know, what would you do in this sort of situation? And I was doing this back at AOL 18 years ago when I was hiring people for my team. And I'd never even heard of it before, but you know, this is 18 years ago. And it was like this whole quote unquote new way of interviewing, like behavioral based interview questions. And I was like, all right, this is kind of cool. I didn't really get it back then. I thought it was so confusing. And I was like, oh my, like, how do I, you know, and they were even giving you the questions that we could ask as managers. And now, all these years later, running a business and hiring people, like, that's the only type of questions I will ask, you know, outside of like, you know, what do you like, you know, learning more about them as a person, but very much behavioral based questions. Can you talk a little bit more about those, like what it means to ask a behavioral based question? Why are we asking those types of questions?
Yeah, absolutely. So the one thing you don't want to do is, just like you said, you don't want to ask a question that's a yes or no, because they're going to be nervous, and you could ask a question and they'll say yes. And then you're just like, dun, dun, dun. Like,
okay.
Yeah. So the reason you're asking the behavioral based questions is to get them to talk, but also just to get a sense of them. It doesn't even, to me, in a lot of the cases, matter so much what they say, but it's the way they say it. So for example, you could ask a question, I call them open-ended questions. You mm-hmm. could ask a question like, how would someone on your last job describe you? Yep. And when you ask that question, it gives them a chance to kind of toot their own horn without mm-hmm. sounding like they're very egotistical. So they yep. could start describing themselves, and it lets them kind of open up and loosens them up so that you can really get a sense of them.
Yeah, I love it. Now you've got those five people down to two or three. What's yeah. sort of the next step before offering them the job? Or is there, do you like to put another step in there? Or is yeah. it like, cool, I got it down to three people, I'm just going to make the decision to hire one of them, or what? What's the next step?
Some people at that point know, like, sometimes you just know, like there's yeah. one person that's like, oh, this is the person. And that's yeah. awesome. But if you're still like, oh, I'm not sure, what a lot of people will say is at that point, they wish they could pull some of the qualities from the last three and mesh it into one magical unicorn.
Yeah.
So what I tell people to do is to do a second interview, because yeah. the first one, the other person may have been nervous, you may have been nervous, and there's always more questions to ask, and it's more like getting to know each other. Mm-hmm. And so I have I like to have a second interview where I tell them a little bit more about the job, and it's more of a conversation, not so much me drilling them with questions. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times you can pull out some information that by the end of that, you know, you definitely know.
Sure.
Now, if you have someone who you're pretty sure that is the person, but you don't know like 1000% that they are the one, whether you think they're the one or not, I highly recommend that you hire them on a trial basis. Yeah. So you bring them on for just 2 weeks or 30 days, and it's for them to test you as much as it is for you to test them. Because in any team, it's kind of like, it is a relationship. And if you're looking for someone to be your second in command, that's like a marriage. So mm-hmm. you definitely want to kind of test the waters with them before you really bring them on for long term.
And I just want to clarify something here, that for everybody listening, what Teresa's not necessarily saying is like, you have to hire somebody full time. Like, this could be a contractor that you want to work with on a regular basis, who is still working with other clients, you know, or it could be, you know, an actual person that you're hiring full time on the team. It could go either way. Now, the trial period is really key. And this is something that we started doing in our business a year and a half ago. Like, it took me a while to do that. And, you know, that's the whole trial basis is like, you know, 30, 60, 90 days in order to, what Teresa's saying, test somebody out. Like, how well do they fit?
Exactly. Exactly. How well do they fit and how well do you fit for them? Because, you know, you've been talking about the job, but until they really get in it, they won't really know. And a lot of times the person that you're hiring has never worked in our world of digital marketing, and it's kind of a different world. Mm-hmm. So there's a big learning curve for a lot of people that come in. It's very rare that you find someone who already knows all the weird tools that we use and understands launching and all of that. So when they come in, it's just kind of like, you know, they have this, it's like learning a new language. And so during that learning period, you'll get to know each other really well.
So that is exactly what I was going to talk about before, where we led here. Before we get to that, I do have one more thing though. How do you feel about giving like test projects prior to bringing somebody on? So for example, if we have it down to like three people, one thing that I've done, I would say inconsistently and to my detriment, honestly, is not have a test project, like give them something to do that aligns with something that they would normally be doing in this role if we were to hire them. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a perfect thing for people to do, especially if it's something like social media, where you could have them do a test project where they're writing a bunch of captions and they're learning your voice and you're really kind of testing them out, because learning voice is something that some people just never can get. It's it can be really tricky. Yeah. And they may totally be great at, you know, doing social media for a big major brand, but we need them to speak in our voice. And some people have trouble with that. And I know from being in script writing for years, some people get it, some people don't. Yeah. So it's a great way to test. So that's why I say like a 2 week trial, you could make that 2 week trial be a test project. But if you have three people who are really awesome, absolutely you can do a test project. And if it's a really big project, I really recommend like you just pay all three of those people to do that project. I'm not suggesting that you bring people on and make them work for 2 weeks and they don't get paid.
Right.
You're letting three different people do the same sort of project and then you can see which one really stands out. And social media is a perfect example of this. You could have a bunch of people write some posts and someone is going to stand out ahead of the crowd every time.
Now you mentioned bring somebody on who knows the space, knows your type of business, knows the online marketing space versus not. And I don't mean not bringing somebody, I mean just bringing somebody on who doesn't know the space.
Yes.
This is a big conversation that, you know, you and I have talked a lot about. I talk, you know, with my friends and colleagues a lot about pros and cons. Where do you stand on this? And just to give some context on this, just to kind of paint the picture a little bit better, it's like, do we hire somebody who knows the internet marketing's online marketing space, knows what a launch is, knows what an email list, knows what, you know, ConvertKit or ActiveCampaign or funnels or whatever it might be? Or do we bring somebody on, or do we look for somebody who doesn't necessarily know this world and we're hiring more so on the intangibles, the personality, the work ethic, the, you know, how do they empathize, all different types of stuff, which we can then teach them the online marketing stuff, if information that we need them to know for the business. Again, it's pros and cons on both sides. And I've done both. And I'm actually thinking about going back more towards the hiring people who know the space.
Right.
And so talk about this. Talk about there, because again, there's pros and cons to it. And we both know people who do both sides.
Both ways, yes. Yeah. So I personally feel that it kind of depends on where you are with your business. For most of the people who follow me, most of them are multi-six figure earners or under. And for that, when you go and hire someone who already knows all that we do, the price point is way higher. Because they're coming to the table with all the skills. So that's really the biggest con is that you're going to be paying for them coming to the table with everything. For most of my clients, I recommend that they hire someone based on work ethic, personality, that they mesh with you, that they have the drive and the gumption that they want to dive in and roll up their sleeves and learn everything. That type of person will learn really, really quickly. And if you have your business set up with systems and processes and recordings of how to do it, everything, they come up to speed really fast because they have that personality, that the drive to do it. And they're really invested and they want to be part of what you're doing. Now, when you are a multi-seven-figure earner, starting from scratch is a lot harder because you usually have a gaping hole in your business that you need filled, and you need it filled quickly. Yeah. So in that case, I totally understand why someone wants to hire someone who already has the skills and have them step into that role and hit the ground running. But you're going to pay for that. And because you're multi-seven, you usually have more of the capacity to do that. Mm-hmm. The other option is to always have more people in your business than just, you know, you and one other person. Most multi-seven figure earners do have several people on their team. And if someone who's high up on the team leaves or decides to, you know, move out of the country and they're no longer going to be working for you, there's sometimes someone else in the company who can step up into that position and they already have the skills. But in most cases, for a seven-figure earner, if they want to fill, let's say, like the second-in-command role, they're going to have to pay for someone to step into that with already having all of that knowledge. And that's really the downside.
Yeah. Okay, so you mentioned like having the systems and processes, having the processes documented, videos, step-by-step, that sort of thing. Now, you mentioned, I'm going to look back through my notes here and just streamlining the back end of the business. That's what you mentioned.
Yes.
And a lot of that comes down to systems and processes.
It's not sexy.
It is not, but I love this side of the, I love the side of the business. And this is something, this is a big mistake that I made in my business where I didn't start documenting what we were doing on a daily basis for the first few years of the business for a long time. And that really set me back, I think, from having a more organized team, like on the larger scale, is because I didn't, you know, a lot of people say like, well, I didn't build my email list from day one or whatever. And like, well, I did that. The thing I didn't do from day one is like, I didn't document systems and processes. Like,
yeah,
it was a mess. Talk about that. Where does somebody start? Why is it important? How do they scale that? And why are they doing it?
Yeah, I think the why is super important for people to wrap their head around because, like I said, it's not sexy. It doesn't sound like fun. Like, creating systems and processes. Like, they imagine these documents that are really complicated. And honestly, having some of those documents is hugely helpful. But what's really more important is that you understand it's kind of like your contingency plan. Everybody could get sick. Everybody may take a really long vacation. Anyone who works for you could go on maternity leave. And anytime that happens, you suddenly have a job opening where only one person knew how to do it. Only one person knew where the passwords were. Only one person knew how to do this ninja thing that you do every single week. And that's dangerous. So having these systems and processes really is security for you. And also security for your team if something happens to you. If you suddenly get sick, you know, you could catch the flu and be out for a week, and all of a sudden everything comes to a screeching halt because they don't know how to do something. So it doesn't have to be, though. What people think is they have in their head that it has to be this really detailed document. And it could be as simple as you just recording yourself doing whatever it is you do and having your team members record themselves. So for example, we started with my team. I have a podcast and it had a very complicated setup for everything that we did. It always had a PDF going out. It had a transcript, all these pieces. So what I did is, as I did each thing myself, I just recorded it. So I had like 10 recordings. You know, this is how you set up the blog post. This is how you do the transcript. And when I brought someone on for the first time to do it, they literally just watched the video and then did it themselves. And eventually we did have someone on the team create a document that was step by step with all the screenshots. And that's awesome. And having that has been hugely helpful. But I didn't have to start that way. You can just record it and have all those recordings in a Google Doc. It can be really, really simple.
That's what we started with. We did Google Docs for the first couple of years. And I say, like, we didn't really, you know, document the processes. But once we started, it was a Google Doc and we had some links and stuff like that. And it was very informal.
Yes.
And it was a mess. It was very informal though. And like with, you know, what do you say? record the screen. It's like Loom, you know?
Yes.
Like free tool here. Grab Loom and just start recording your screen. Absolutely. As you know, set up an email in your email CRM, or, you know, how you set up a Facebook ad, or whatever it is, like upload a blog post, whatever it is in your business, record it, you know?
Yes.
And do it before you need it.
Yes. Yes. And see, here's the thing is people will have something like setting up a Facebook ad, something really complicated. And they're like, oh, I can't take the time to teach this. You literally should only have to do it once and very slowly and deliberately talk yourself through it while you're recording. You only have to do it once and someone else can follow it. And they really do just sit there and watch like a minute, stop and go do the thing, and watch another minute, go do the thing. It's so, so simple and it's huge. It takes so much off your back.
It's the paradox of time, right? It's like, oh, it's going to take me longer to do this. Well, yes, it is, because you're going to talk through it than if you weren't doing that. But it's going to save you time when someone else is doing it 80 other times, you know, down the road, and you don't have to do it. So exactly. Yes, it's going to take a little bit more time now, but it's going to save you so much more time down the road. And that was another thing too, that where I didn't start doing that because I wasn't thinking ahead. Like I wasn't thinking about that. But when I started to, you know, hire people for the team, I was like, oh, need process. I need to show them like what we do. And then we start doing it. Well, for everybody listening, and if you're not there yet, or maybe you have like, you know, regardless of whatever it is that you're doing in the business, and maybe hiring a person to do that is way down the road, start recording it now. It's going to save you so much time and you'll have it done. And, you know, our iteration for documenting this stuff was, like I said, Google Docs. And then we did the Google Apps. I think it has like an intranet site. You can build a free website or whatever within Google Apps. That's what we did. And again, it was just like a series of links. And it was like, oh, to do this, this is how you do it. And all free. And then we moved to Process Street.
Yep.
And you know, that's what we use today. And Process Street is awesome because you can put videos and PDFs and all kinds of attachments and all kinds of different stuff in there. And it's not expensive. I think we pay like $5 a month or something like that. And they have a free version.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing. And how you do it doesn't have to be this elaborate system. It's just doing it. And like Teresa said, guys, is that you can just use Loom and record your screen and then stick it on a Google Doc and say how to blah, blah, blah. And then there's your video and you're good to go.
Yes. And a little tip, if you do it in a Google Doc, you can have one of the columns be like tag words, so that it's searchable. Mm. So like you could have, you know, like blog, SEO, you know, things like that as your tag words. And then when you're doing a search in the Google Doc, you can find all the videos that deal with SEO. Makes it really simple to find.
Love that. I love little ninja hacks like that.
That's ninja. Yeah,
it is. So we have a few minutes left and I don't know if it's the, I'm opening a big can of worms because we can do an entire episode on just this topic here, but I do want to chat about it at least. And, you know, we're throwing around terms like integrator and visionary. And those two terms comes from, as you mentioned before, the book Rocket Fuel by Gino Wickman. He also wrote Traction, which is like the Bible of running your business. Guys, if you've not read Traction, like don't stop right now.
Stop everything.
As soon as you're done this episode, go on Amazon, order Traction. I mean, we pretty much reference it in our business. If not every day, it's every few days, you know, for something. It's an amazing book. And then the follow-up to that is Rocket Fuel. And it's all about this whole concept of visionary and integrator. Visionary being you as the CEO and president of your business and why you're doing what you're doing. And then there's the integrator role, which is that person is executing your vision. So talk a little bit more about that, Teresa. And also, when you do chat about it, who is this right for? And who is it maybe not right for yet in their business?
Ah, that's a really good question. So, okay, first of all, let's talk about what exactly the integrator is. Now, people call the integrator different things. It could be director of operations. It could be second in command. It could be wingman. It could be online business manager. The title doesn't matter. What it is the role of someone being the executor of the vision. And what the executor of the vision is where you take the vision that the CEO has come up with, and you just make it happen.
Could be hand of the king or hand of the queen for all you Game of Thrones fans out there. That's your integrator right there.
There you go. Yeah. So it really is about taking whatever it is that the vision is that they have. So let's just use a tangible example. Let's say that they want to add 100 people to their membership. And that is a goal for the quarter. And they hand that responsibility off to their integrator. It's like, I really need you to execute on getting 100 more people into the membership. And you can brainstorm on what that means exactly, but all the tasks and all the responsibilities and the projects of having that happen then are handed off to the integrator, and the integrator takes that and runs with it. That does not mean that they are the doer of all the things. It means that they are overseeing the execution. So in television production, that meant that I was overseeing the production crew. I did not have a camera in my hand. I was not filming, but I had to make sure that the filming was getting done and that all the things were on time and the calendar and all of that. It's the same thing in our business. So they are assigning who is doing what, and they're making sure that the things are getting done in a timely manner. So that's executing on the vision. And it's when I talk to people about this, the first thing I get is that even possible? And yes, yeah. It is. That's the goal you're working towards. And the second thing from the integrator is, well, if I'm doing all that, what is the CEO doing? The CEO has to be the one that is doing the things that only they can do. They are the face of the brand. They are the podcast voice. They are the person being interviewed. They are the person coming up with the whole vision for the next year, the next 3 years, the next 5 years. They're also the person who has all the relationships with other companies and with affiliates, and they have to be bringing in more business. So it's all of those things. The coaching is usually just the CEO, unless you have team coaches. Mm-hmm. So all of that is on the CEO, and they cannot also be watching over all these little projects and all the little minutiae that has to happen when you're working on that project. That has to be handed off to the second in command, which is the integrator. And who is it good for?
How does one know they're ready for that? Because I can imagine that some people listening like that, like, oh, holy cow, like this is like, that's possible. Like this is amazing,
yeah.
But I'm not there yet.
Yes.
What does yet mean for people?
They first should have someone who is like their executive assistant. Mm-hmm. So it's still like a wingman, but a little bit smaller role. Mm-hmm. So that person steps into that role and is helping them with their personal calendar, is helping them with some of the projects, is taking some of the things off their plate. But when you get to the point where you have way more projects than you have time, then the second in command has to step in. So it's a fine line as to when you are ready. A lot of it can be a financial decision. When you're ready to bring on someone to be able to do that more, doesn't even have to be full time, but with more hours. Or it could be where you then take your executive assistant and they come up to that position of being the second in command. That's the way most people do it, is mm-hmm. as they are growing and their business is growing, they're hitting a ceiling in the amount of time and they're trying to run their business on their solopreneur framework. And until they bring on that second person, the Robin to their Batman, and hand off all those things, until they do that, they're going to keep hitting that ceiling. And if you're hitting a ceiling, you need to hand off more.
Last question on this.
Okay.
I'm going to put you on the spot right now.
Okay.
Top three qualities that someone should be looking for in an integrator.
Okay, well, it is a personal question because everybody has their own thing. But I feel that being a problem solver first, because you want them to be coming up with the solutions without having to come to you for every little thing. So being a problem solver would be one. Being in integrity is one that's big for me, because I feel integrity is not just being honest. It's about being of your word, and being of your word to the team, being of your word to all of the customers. Being in integrity is a very important trait for someone to have. When the second in command is in integrity, that means if they promise something on a certain date, they will make sure it hits that date. You can count on them no matter what.
Yeah.
And so that is an important trait. Being resourceful, there's always going to be roadblocks that come up. And if they're a real creative thinker and they're resourceful, they can handle things on their own without you. And I guess the last one would be being courageous, because they're going to have to step out of their comfort zone sometimes too. We are always working on that as CEOs. We're always working on our leadership. We're always talking about stepping outside our comfort zone. And that's something that the second in command needs to do as well, because they are going to be handling things on your behalf and making decisions on your behalf. And so they have to step into courage in order to do that.
This could be a whole other, and as you're talking here, I'm like, you're going to have to come back on the show, because there's so much we haven't even covered yet. But I do want to, I know I said I want to finish with that, but you touched on something I think is really important to make sure that we do discuss real quick, is that, you know, the whole having values for your business and for your team. And this is something that you and I have chatted about for my business, where the values that I had created were more, they were both business and team within the same list. And I thought this was so interesting and so, I mean, spot on. One tweak that you had me make was, what are the values for the team? And then not only that, and by the way, Traction goes over all, like a whole section on values and stuff, guys. If you do not have values for your team, 100% you should have values for your team as you build it out. And, you know, one of the distinctions that you made for me, Teresa, was don't just list integrity. What does that mean to you? Right. To have integrity, because that integrity means something different for everybody.
For everybody, yes.
And so, like, you know, integrity is a team value. And then say, you know, we do this, you know, when we say we're going to do something, we do it. That's an example of integrity. And that's an example of how we value integrity in our business. And that little distinction there was huge for me, because that was something I didn't have until very recently in the business, in 5.5 years in the business. Like, I had the values, yes, but they weren't focused on the team values. And then I also hadn't explained what each of those values means to me, and what I want the team members to see and get out of those values, or to ensure those values were reflected.
Exactly. So what we were talking about then was how you had to really share that with the team. So those core values, we put them on all of our internal documents for the company. So they're always front and center. And we also talk about some of those different values at some of our meetings. So it's super important. And there's a lot of fun ways that you can incorporate it, you know, into all of your meetings. But it's super important that you are always communicating not only your vision, but your goals. And when the team is kind of more dialed in to how we think, I mean, it's funny how we end up thinking that they should be reading our mind, because we're thinking all the things all the time. And it's like, well, of course they should know this, right? Well, until we articulate it, they don't know it. And so it helps them. And so one of the things that I talk about is a lot how communication, it's kind of like the glue that holds everything together. And so when you have that glue, and you have that communication, you have empathy for both sides. So we get upset because we're like, well, couldn't they just figure that out? Like, how did they not know that that was something I wanted? That means we didn't communicate it. That's on us. And we have to have empathy for them trying to read our mind. But also for the second in command, they have to have empathy for the huge amount of pressure that the CEO has. The CEO has so many things on their plate, and it's our job to be pulling those things off of the plate and to be buffering so more doesn't get put on their plate, so that they can stay in their zone of genius. So that communication is really key, because it allows both sides to communicate and have empathy for each other. And that's when you start getting your team really working well together.
Yeah, I love it. Like I said, we could talk about this. I mean, there's so many things that we haven't talked yet about that are so important. And I think we're just scratching the surface here today. So I will definitely have you back on. This is amazing.
Awesome. I'd love to be back.
Thank you for coming on and chatting. I feel like we covered a lot of different things. And like I told you before we hit record, and as with most every interview that I do on the show here, I don't know where it's going to go. I don't have a list of questions in front of me. This is like me and you sitting down, and I have a kind of an idea of what I want to cover, but like, then it's just like, where does this go? And I think that, you know, and I'm asking some selfish questions for me, but I'm also asking questions for, like, based on what you're saying, that I think AOPT Nation here is going to get a lot of benefit out of for where they're at in their business. So thank you for covering a whole bunch of different topics that we talked about here today. I want to make sure people can connect with you, Teresa. What's the best place for them to do that?
Yeah, so they can connect with me either at teresalowe.com or they can go to teamuproadmap.com, and we have resources for how to assess if you're ready for a team, what to do once you get a team, all of that. So they can catch me there.
Teamuproadmap.com. .com. And Teresa Lowe is TheresaLoe.com. I'll link up everything in the show notes for today's episode. Teresa, thank you again. I love talking about this stuff. Thank you again for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Hey, so something I hear all the time is, Rick, aren't you just the Facebook ads guy? And yeah, I'm pretty well known for Facebook and Instagram ads. But the thing that's easy to overlook is that it's taken way more than just ads for me to build a seven-figure thriving online business. It took things like exactly what we talked about today, building a team, positioning myself as an expert, creating and launching courses and membership programs, and I do live events. It has taken and takes mastering my mindset. This is the number one thing that I'm always working on and trying to improve. It's taken time management and how do I fulfill for my existing customers. And I could go on here. Now, most experts, and I have certainly been guilty of this in the past, teach Facebook and Instagram ads in a vacuum. But to create sustainable growth, it takes a more holistic strategy because it's all connected, my friends. If you're an online expert, say you're a coach, you're a course creator, you're a consultant, and you've already achieved a certain level of success, but you're spinning your wheels now to get to the next level, you very likely do not need another course or to read more books. What you need is a cohesive growth strategy, one that combines the things that I just mentioned, like mindset and becoming the actual CEO of your business. How do you stop doing all the things in your business and building out a team so that you can free up your time? How do you get more visibility and build your authority more? How do you take advantage of paid and organic traffic, all that stuff, right? And to help you with those things, coaching, accountability, community, and support. So if you're an online expert and your business is in a place where your days are getting eaten up with busy work and you're doing all the things in your business and you're starting to burn out, super, super common. If you dream of having a team that's got your back, that excels in the areas that you don't and is as committed to growing your business as you are, if you're looking for answers on Google, if you're Googling stuff and you're not finding what you're looking for, like, hey, what's the best launch strategy for this new program I have? Or how can I get my Facebook and Instagram ad costs down and my ROI up? Or who should I be hiring to help build my business? If you are subconsciously sabotaging your own success because your mindset hasn't caught up to your reality, this is a huge one, my friends. Well, if you're nodding your head to any one of these things, then I want to help you. In the same way that having a coach helped me grow my business to seven figures, it's my turn to give that gift to others. So if you're an online expert and you're ready for coaching, support, and accountability in taking your business to the next level, then I want to invite you to apply for my 6-month Accelerator Mastermind. And you can schedule a free strategy session so you fill out the assessment, because I don't accept just everyone into the Accelerator. So you fill out an assessment, see if you're a good fit, then we hop on a strategy call, and then further see if you might be a fit for the Accelerator. So again, this is a 6-month Accelerator Mastermind. It is a small group, no more than 15 people. I get that question a lot, and it runs from July 2019 here to the end of the year, to December 2019. So if you'd like to learn more and apply, just go to rickmulready.com/accelerator. Again, it's rickmulready.com/accelerator. All right, my friends, coming up next here in the podcast, I've got another quick tip episode coming your way on Friday. So until then, and as always, thank you so much for listening to the show here. I appreciate you very much. Keep testing your online marketing to find out what works for you and your business. Then do more of what's working, right? I'll see you in the next episode.
Don't worry, there's more of Art of Paid Traffic coming soon. If you can't wait for more incredible digital marketing strategies, head over to rickmulready.com. We'll see you next time.
Do you want to avoid the seven biggest mistakes that burn through course creators' ad money? I see these over and over and over again, and I put them together in a mini email series. This is not fluff. Each of the seven mistakes, I also have a recorded video tutorial showing you inside of Facebook Ad Manager how to fix those mistakes. This is good, solid, and it will save you money or help you make more money with your Facebook ads. Click down in the show notes below. You'll see the link and you can go download it right now for free.